You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favourite shows from. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke, Jonathan Breyer, and Gary Riley.
Hello everyone and welcome to Series 6, Episode 5 of Between the Stripes LOI podcast. It's Kieran Burke and Gary Riley this week. No John Breyer, he's on a gondola somewhere, probably full of cans. So hope you're enjoying your trip to Italy, John. And Gary, he went without the missus.
Controversial. Oh, he was dead right. Get a bit of peace.
I know, hopefully she's feeling better under the weather, but he took the selfless decision, shall we say, to head on that plane anyway.
Yeah, he didn't want to wait on the missus hand and foot.
I think he was taking in some Serie A as well, so he'll be able to tell us all about that, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think he was talking about going to a Udinese game, so I didn't actually check the score in that game. I was too busy over the weekend, huffing and puffing about last Friday.
Yeah, we'll get to that, don't worry. But hopefully the fact that he actually got out and watched a bit of live football, he hasn't seen too much this season yet, so hopefully that might help him with his predictions, because he had a shocker last week.
He did indeed, and yours truly is probably one of the best ever results, I'd say, was it?
I was waiting for, there it is, 1:07. It didn't take long.
There
didn't
you go. Take long at all. There you go.
Record-breaking week from you. Three correct score lines, and you got every other result right as well.
There you go.
But I'm still a point clear of you in the table, but it's a tight little title race.
It is indeed, yeah. John is bringing up the rear.
Who would have thought? Who would have thought?
Oh, well, he was very lucky last season. Very lucky.
Even
when you think about it, how many weeks did he miss that he didn't send in predictions at all?
That is true. Yeah. And I can tell you, John, me and Gary, we travelled down to Limerick, which we'll get to in a second together. And I've seen the boot of the car. The cans are there, so that they are on their way. But look, folks, we've got a lot to get through as ever, because we've had two sets of fixtures in both the Premier Division and the First Division. It's rare enough that happens. So we've got an awful lot of results to get through. What we'll do is we'll not go in-depth game by game, but we'll have a general discussion about how each team has fared over the last couple of days, any big stories and any big topics to pick up on. We'll cover all of that. Of course, then later on in the show, we'll look ahead to this weekend's games again in both divisions, as we always do here on Between the Stripes LOA podcast. We'll play our predictions game as well. But we've got one guest on the show this week, and we're going to start with him. That is the media officer and board member at Treaty United Football Club. I'm sure you all seen this at the weekend, the BTS crew. We were one of the unfortunate souls that headed off early in the day down towards Limerick expecting a game of football. And with about an hour to go, it was all looking good. We were just arriving at the ground, ready to get out of the car. And then the word came through that the game was off. How on earth does that happen in a league, what's meant to be a professional league, in this day and age? We're going to find out now by speaking to Mike Ahern. We had some questions for him. And fair play to Mike for coming on and having a chat with us. And this is what he had to say. Now, we're joined on Between the Stripes LOI podcast by the media officer and board member of Treaty United Football Club. That's Mike Ahern. Mike's here to discuss the ongoing pitch issues at the Markets Fields. Mike, a really frustrating start to the season for Treaty, a month in, and you haven't played a home game yet.
No, Kieran, and I suppose as we look ahead to Friday in the hope of hosting a big Munster derby with Cork City, we won't know until Wednesday afternoon regarding the state of the pitch with an inspection plan. But yeah, three away games, no home games, and without a home gate now within 5 months, you can imagine the coffers are starting to run a little bit drier with Treaty United. But look, nonetheless, I think it's out of everybody's control at the moment. The weather has certainly played its part, but very, very frustrating with the late nature of the kickoffs being cancelled. I mean, we were ready for Waterford an hour from kickoff in the Munster Senior Cup and the game was postponed. A similar situation then with Longford last week, and squeezed between that, the Athlone game was cancelled too. So it does mean that we haven't kicked the ball in anger, and that's just not for the men's team, but for the women's senior team as well. They were due to play Cork City in their big Munster derby last Saturday, and again, because of the unplayable pitch, there was no action taken place.
Yeah, as you mentioned, there's a precautionary inspection due tomorrow. We're speaking here Tuesday evening, so tomorrow there's going to be a precautionary inspection ahead of the game this weekend. So how likely at this moment in time is it looking like on or off, or what way are we thinking?
Well, I suppose as we speak to you this evening, there is a light drizzle in Limerick City, so I'm not sure that will overly help the situation. I think we needed a couple of dry days. We did get them in the two preceding days, so I suppose it just depends on how well that patch of ground, the resodded surface, has bedded in. I'm not sure if you walked it yourself, but I certainly did last Friday night. It was very, very loose underfoot, and I think, to be fair, the match official gave the game every single opportunity, as he's supposed to do anyway, to go ahead. But if any player had turned and turned unexpectedly on a surface like that, it was lifting underneath and it just wasn't safe. So I think it was the correct decision, albeit it was so frustrating for Longford supporters who had taken half days, spent a lot of money travelling down, and for Treaty supporters who were en route to the game. But I think at this point, Kieran, we're probably best leaving the decision between the FAI and, of course, the designated match officials. The resodded turf will be the key to this. It's just outside the penalty area, playing towards the city end of the ground. It's a large patch, I suppose just slightly smaller than the penalty area, so it's a significant part of the pitch, and let's just hope it's had enough time in the last 6 days to bed in, and at least we'll know plenty in advance of the Cork game, at least 2 days this time round, whether we look like we're going ahead or not.
Yeah, I suppose one of the main reasons we got you on, Mike, as you said, a lot of frustration in particular from Longford Town fans. I suppose the club has come in for a bit of flack in that regard, so we thought it'd be right to get someone from Treaty on and let you speak your part and have a say on that. I suppose from a Longford Town point of view, there's even more frustration now when Longford fans look and see a pitch inspection taking place 2 days before a game, whereas this game, there was a pitch inspection that morning. The reports coming out of Limerick weren't overly promising. Longford fans were still advised to travel, really. There was no word that this game was going to be off. It was looking good up until an hour before kickoff, and then all of a sudden, everyone was told to go home. So what's the difference here that Cork have been given 2 or 3 days' notice, pretty much, and Longford, they didn't get that? What has there been a reason behind that?
Well, I mean, look, I suppose from a board point of view, we were all systems go for last Friday. We too only found out late on Thursday night that there was an early morning look. It wasn't described as an inspection of the facility ahead of the game. And you have to remember, it did pass the early check last Friday morning, so it did look good. I don't think anybody could have predicted the deluge of rain that fell, particularly between 1:30 and 4:00 last Friday, and that ended any hopes. So I think this time, as you would have seen on the club social media, it's more of a precautionary check. I mean, we still don't know what could happen between Thursday and Friday. Even if the game does get a go-ahead tomorrow with the precautionary pitch inspection, it doesn't mean that there won't be significant rain on Thursday or Friday, which could further jeopardise the situation. I do know, Kieran, that work is ongoing at the ground every day between the LEDP. Treaty United have support workers in there as well. So I think every effort that can be made is being made to get the pitch playable. And the FAI too have been down in the past couple of weeks. They've looked at the surface. They've offered recommendations. Those recommendations were adopted by the LEDP and Treaty, particularly last week in the lead up to the Longford game. But unfortunately, nobody could predict the weather. And yes, entirely frustrating for everybody. And you do have to be empathetic and sympathetic towards Longford Town, in particular their supporters, because with the price of fuel, and you just have to look at any of the garages these days, it's not an easy journey. Many would have taken half days. And even Treaty United fans, I had a car full of young supporters, very disappointed, and you're dealing with the emotional distress that they too would endure, and they haven't seen their team at home this season. So it's an entirely frustrating situation for everybody, and that includes the FAI, the LEDP, the Treaty United board, supporters across the country, and of course it'll mean at some stage fixture congestion in the First Division, just the Athlone Town game rescheduled for the 4th of April. So again, you'd be hoping, at least if this weekend's fixture goes ahead, it's a huge game for the club against Cork City in a Munster derby, that it would avoid further fixture congestion, because right now Longford and Treaty will still be wondering about a refix date, which is likely to be midweek and not ideal for either club.
Just to get the timeline on this, so there was a pitch inspection or a precautionary look at the pitch, as you describe it there, at 10:30 in the morning, I believe it was. Who carried out that inspection? Because whoever did deemed it fit at the time. And did either club request an earlier inspection from the FAI, from the match officials?
Well, my understanding of the situation, Kieran, and I, like many, was kind of looking from a distance, but as I got there Friday evening, got to understand the situation a little bit better, was that some match officials, not the actual referee for the game, did attend the Markets Field on Friday morning. They did have a precautionary check, and they did at that stage feel that the game was to go ahead. We did anticipate rain in the afternoon, but as I mentioned, not the deluge that arrived. And it was only when the match official arrived with his team of officials and, of course, the representative from the FAI that everybody, for the first time, I suppose, really got together. There would have been plenty of warning signs there throughout the last couple of weeks with the resodded piece of turf, knowing that it would have had to have bed in. So for me, yeah, you can take the criticism and think it could have been called off earlier. But again, following protocol, it's the FAI delegate, it's the match officials that look at the ground. They make their deliberations, and they informed both clubs less than an hour before kickoff. And I go back to the referee in this. I thought he gave it every single opportunity. The representations from both clubs out on the pitch, they expressed concern, they expressed their hopes that the game would go ahead, but unfortunately he kept looking at the turf and its ability to turn without too much pressure on it from a foot, and it was turning. And you can imagine if three or four players went through the same sort of turf during the game, you would literally be playing on mud, and I don't think that would be conducive or safe.
That's just where the confusion comes in for me, because you've mentioned it there that you walked the pitch, you could see there was loose turf. I spoke to someone that walked the pitch. They said that you could nearly lift up the sod of turf that they seen. And there was a tweet as well by a local journalist who said he had spoken to players who felt the pitch was weeks away from being fit for purpose. So how on earth did that pitch pass a 10:30 inspection, or how was it given the chance to? Surely the game should have been called there and then.
Yeah, and look, I fully appreciate those points and take on board what people did see. And like I say, when I walked it myself, I wouldn't have been convinced that it was safe to play in it. Having played soccer all my life, players play the game at pace. And if you were trying to stop, certainly at a sudden burst, after a sudden burst, you would certainly turn that turf. It was loose. So again, I don't know how it passed that inspection, but I'm sure there's a very, very qualified team of officials who follow certain criteria that must be met to ensure a pitch is safe. Again, I don't think anybody realizes the amount of rain that did fall. Certainly many, many millimeters of rain fell in the afternoon, and that really loosened the resodded patch of turf to quite a severe extent. So perhaps in the morning, it just wasn't moving. It was a dry enough morning in Limerick. The sun was even out on Friday morning, and that's the way the match officials looked at it. But certainly from my own point of view, from looking at it at 7 o'clock, you just could not risk a player being injured. It was lifting, it was movable, and you just have to hope in the 5 days that will pass between last Friday and Wednesday afternoon that it will have settled in somewhat. For me, I'm not a pitch expert, but it would want to be happening pretty quickly compared to what was the scene last Friday night.
Does the FAI need to take more responsibility here? Because the pitch inspection that took place early that morning, it passed, it probably just barely passed. As you mentioned, then there was very bad weather that afternoon. I think from what I understand, Longford Town did look for an earlier pitch inspection, but they were told, from what I understand again, that the pitch inspection would be carried out by the officials when they arrived. At that stage, obviously, supporters and both teams had already set off for the ground. So is this something the FAI need to look at and get protocols in place? It's obviously a big positive to see. The fact, as we've touched on, there's going to be a pitch inspection early in the week for the upcoming Cork game. So perhaps lessons have been learned, but this is certainly an incident that needs to be reviewed.
Yeah, but not an isolated incident. You look at the Women's National League game in Wexford last week, called off within an hour of kickoff as well. And I know there was a second look up at Finn Harps and St. Pat's in the Premier. UCD didn't survive a pitch inspection. So I think, to be fair to the FAI, they do have protocols and they do follow them. And I know they had been in Limerick the week before, just after the Athlone Town game was postponed. They looked at the pitch, they gave recommendations on what works needed to be carried out in order order to deliver a safe pitch. You've got to remember, Kieran, this pitch, and you've been in Limerick in the past number of years, has been absolutely resplendent. Yep. So it's just in a difficult period at the moment where the pitch just needs a bit of time. It's a time that Treaty United don't have, and it's certainly time that supporters and opposition clubs in the First Division don't have time or patience for, because you would expect after the UCD game in the playoff, which is 5 months ago now, that the pitch would have had plenty of time to recover and indeed be at its best for the start of the new season. Obviously, when the weather picks up, it's going to be much better and we'll be probably raving about it come the end of the season. But in the moment now, it is a very, very frustrating period. But going back to your point, I do think the FAI have endeavoured to do their very best, certainly with this Marketsfield surface. They've been offering support again this week to Treaty United and the LEDP in a bid to ensure that there is no more frustration or any more halting of games. Friday will tell a big story. Even Wednesday will tell the story after the pitch inspection. But I think from a league point of view, yes, certainly it's very, very frustrating when games are called off at short notice. But again, with the unpredictability of the weather, it's very, very hard. You know, it even happens on a local scene. We travelled to get two games last Sunday that were both called off by the match official, having been given the green light on the Saturday. So again, I think it's really down to the match official. That's the protocol. And when the match official travelled down last Friday evening after a long journey, he did give it every opportunity to be played. And unfortunately, having looked at the pitch, it just wasn't safe.
As you've touched on, look, Treaty, they don't maintain that pitch themselves. It's done by a third party and they obviously don't control the weather. So there's not too much blame that could be placed at the door of Treaty in that regard. But some Longford Town fans, maybe they feel that, from what I've been reading on social media and speaking to fans that did travel down, they feel a little bit disappointed and felt maybe the communication lines could have been better from Treaty United as a club. What would your comments be on that, given you're involved with the media team?
Yeah, well, Treaty United followed every protocol as well. As you know, it's the National League that will put out the first notification of a fixture being cancelled. So the FAI delegate and the match officials were quick to be in communication back with head office last Friday evening to notify them that the game was not to go ahead. And as soon as the league made it official, only then would Treaty United go out and pass on a similar message. And it was less than an hour before kickoff. I know Longford Town put it out a couple of minutes before Treaty United and the league, but I mean, give or take 5 minutes, I'm not too sure it made any difference to anybody who would have been travelling to the game. They would have had their journey almost complete towards 7 o'clock. A lot of people like to get into the ground and get there early and get their seat and their programme and so on in preparation for the game. But look, I think it's just very, very frustrating, Kieran, for everyone. And that includes Treaty supporters who only had to make a hop, skip and jump up the road compared to Longford fans who travelled all afternoon. You make it part of your weekly routine. You want to get to the game. You want to enjoy seeing your team in action. And none of that happened last Friday night. And the club are out of pocket. Longford are out of pocket with their travelling party. Imagine buses, you know, food, the players' expenses. I mean, it's an expensive business. And when you have no home gate coming in, it's a very disappointing part of life for Treaty United at the moment. And it's unforgiving, really, because you still have to go and you still have to pay for your trip to Galway, like, on Monday night in the league. You still had to fulfill the away fixtures. So look, I think it all needs to be reviewed when this is done and dusted. It'll be time to reflect and look back and see what changes we could make going forward. But from a communications point of view, as ever, you follow the league's advice, and the league's advice was that they would announce the fixture cancellations, that they would announce that if fixtures are in doubts or there's pitch inspections, and then that you follow suit. So that's exactly what the Treaty United media team did last Friday.
Yeah, I suppose it just came as a shock to people that were travelling down. They seen, I think it was maybe 25 minutes before the game was officially called off, they seen a picture go up of the pitch and that the game was on. It was all systems go. But I suppose, as you've pointed out there, you can only go on the word you're given at that moment in time. The game was on, so you were doing what you do every week and promote the game to try and get as many people out there as possible. But some Longford Town fans felt maybe you could have held fire and been a little bit more cautious with the updates. So again, I'll give you a chance to respond to that.
Yeah, look, I mean, all feedback is very welcome, and you take it on board, and you try and react positively to any sort of feedback or criticism that's constructive that comes your way. I suppose the big thing, and you'll know well from League of Ireland football, 99% of people that are involved in the game in this country are doing it on a volunteer basis. So many members of the Treaty United media team and the wider stewarding and the so on of the ground, you know, they've all worked a long day and they get out of their way to go up to the markets field and support the club and do it on a voluntary basis, and none more so than the media team. And the more people understand that, that a lot of people are giving up their free time to try and keep people as best updated. I think, I mean, you look across the league from the First Division to the Premier Division, the media teams do phenomenal work these days. The skills that are involved from a digital and technical point of view, outstanding. The LOI TV now is done a lot by the clubs as well. So I think the media team deserve a lot of credit, and maybe once or twice when they do get it wrong, or maybe are a little bit late with the communication, then a lot of other things go on the ground on the night. It's not just about making one announcement, but I think the significance of last Friday's announcement could have certainly been made a lot easier and a lot earlier by everybody.
Yeah, that's fair enough, totally. Last question, I suppose, Mike. A lot of Town fans have been asking about refunds as well, and the status in regards to refunds or tickets been reissued, or what's the situation there?
So I think like every game, Kieran, then your ticket is valid for the refixed game. So while many Longford towns will probably err on the side of caution and probably not make the trip the next night, particularly as it will be scheduled for a midweek game, you would think, then they can get in touch with Treaty United at our information page and we'll certainly accommodate that request. So there's absolutely no difficulty with that. But anybody that does want to keep the original ticket for last Friday's game, then that will stand for the refixed game at the Markets Field.
Yep, that's fair enough. Mike, look, thanks a million for coming on. Very honest. It was certainly a really disappointing night for everyone, both sides, but hopefully we'll have a bit more luck going forward. But definitely, I think procedures and kind of structures that are in place at the moment across the league maybe need to be looked at.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I think Treaty United, Longford, everybody will be happy to feed into that, Kieran. And I think the more people that feed back, the more voices will be heard. And I think, to be fair, the FAI are a listening organisation at the moment. They've certainly improved in terms of communication. And I think they'd appreciate, too, hearing the frustrations, and everybody can work forward towards a solution in the future.
Great stuff. Mike, very honest as ever. Thanks a million for joining us, and best of luck in hopefully getting a home game soon.
Thanks, Kieran. Hopefully we'll play in the playoffs at home.
Very good.
Are you enjoying the show? Please consider buying us a beer via our website betweenthestripes.net or head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BTSLOI. Thank you for your continued support of Between the Stripes.
Yeah, so that was Mike Ahern, media officer and board member at Treaty United. And fair play again to Mike for coming on. Obviously, knew he was going to get a couple of difficult questions. They've come under some scrutiny during the week, but fair play to him for fronting up and been brave enough to come on the show. Gary, as I said in the intro, we were two of the unfortunate souls that headed down to Limerick. Long, long way to go. A lot of diesel to burn and no football. Give me your thoughts.
Well, what is there to say? You know, I think a shambles is the only way to describe it. I don't know. I was annoyed for like a minute, and then I was more resigned to the fact that this is what we get from the league.
Yeah,
you know, and you know, I said it before. What do you expect from an ass but a cake? Like it's the same yarn that we've been looking at. You know, I'd say if we talk to some of the older fans around the league, the same crap was going on 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And nothing has changed. But, you know, we're saying the same spiel week in, week out. Unfortunately, we have to talk about the FAI yet again. And I don't expect any change to come out of this. Obviously, I will say, like, this isn't unheard of before. I know you were impacted in the past on an away trip down to Cove, of all places.
Yeah, but that was an unfortunate one because it just happened. Torrential downpours just came that day while we were on our way down to Cove. We didn't see a lot of the rain that day. So when we arrived, we were stunned to find we were walking up the hill. It wasn't long to go to kickoff, maybe 10 or 15 minutes. And then someone said, the game is off, lads. But when I actually got to the ground, went out, the pitch had just flooded. That's just an unfortunate thing that happens. Obviously, that morning, everything was A-OK. And just the rain came, pitch couldn't deal with it. That's unfortunate. But Gary, you know as well as I do, I've shared the pictures with you. And if anyone wants to call me out on this and say I'm bullshitting or whatever, you've seen it. I'm happy to post it on social media. I'll take the person's name off it. I got a text from a Treaty United fan 2 weeks ago, pictures of the pitch attached. They told me, this was after the Athlone game was called off. They said, don't be at all surprised if the Longford game is called off in 2 weeks' time. They showed me the pitch. There's been work carried out since then. But the word on the street was this game was not going to go ahead. If we could see that 2 weeks ago, how on earth does it take until 50 minutes before kickoff for the game to be called off? And where does the blame lie? Does it lie solely with one party, or are there multiple parties here that have major, major questions to answer?
Well, there are multiple parties, certainly. Like, I know Mike was talking about, you know, the FAI and protocol and this and that and the other. That isn't real. That isn't in touch with reality, really. It's up the Treaty to have a pitch that can be playable. They don't have that at the minute. So you can talk about, you know, the county council or whoever manages the pitch. At the end of the day, we're not Longford Town. We're not playing members of the county council or city council of Limerick.
LEDP, just to give them their correct. That's who maintains the pitch in Limerick.
Irrelevant. I don't care what their names are. Longford Town were not due to play them.
Yeah.
They were due to play Treaty. Down to play Treaty, dealing with Treaty players and their staff and their club. It's unforgivable. Like, you know, well, there was talk today about the pitch being checked again in advance of the Cork game on Friday.
Yeah, fine. At least that means somewhere, well, let it be Treaty, let it be the FAI, somewhere lessons have been learned, because they said, let's not have the Cork fans arriving and then deciding the game is off. They're going to check it 2 days in advance. Now, it will raise question marks again. If it passes that inspection tomorrow and we get some bad weather or whatever it may be over the next couple of days, we could arise in the same situation again. So, yeah. I would love to know what the FAI's procedures are. Is there an actual procedure in place here? Because obvious and very clear thing to do, the pitch passed a half 10 inspection. I was very interested and I asked Mike and he gave us the answer. Who checked it? Was it club staff or was it a match official of some description?
Mike seemed to
indicate it was a match official, not the match officials for the night, but an official checked the pitch. Whoever checked that pitch and said that it was playable shouldn't be let near a pitch again. They clearly don't understand what a good pitch and a bad pitch is, because it was clear this game was not going to go ahead. So that's the first major fault there. Whoever cleared that pitch at 10:30, they were in the wrong, because that pitch was clearly not fit for purpose. Because even if you look after the game was called off, you'll see a tweet from a local journalist, Andrew Kinnean, and he said he had spoken to a number of Treaty players who said that pitch was weeks away from being safe to play football on. So yeah, whoever passed that pitch at 10:30 was totally in the wrong. So that's the first major issue. But then it was clear bad weather was going to be coming between half 10 and 7:45 that evening. Why was there not a pitch inspection called at 3 or 4 o'clock before the Longford Town team left Dublin or wherever they were travelling from, before all the fans travelled? Apparently, from what we've been told here, Longford Town did request that would take place, but it did not take place. It seems the procedure is the match officials will check the pitch when they arrive after it's passed an initial morning inspection. So that needs to be looked at majorly. So there's the FAI at fault there. And I put it to Mike, there was a lot of suggestions that maybe the communication from the club side of things could have been better. Mike's given us his answer on that. We can agree, we can disagree. But again, there's a number of parties here who seem to be at fault.
Yeah, no, I'll actually take you back there. The inspection, there's far more greater issues. You know, you mentioned, you know, Treaty being at fault at the start, or, you know, the match of, or the inspection that was done that morning. These problems stem from a far more distant past than what you've just described. The pitch is not playable. It hasn't been playable for weeks. They haven't played a home game yet. Mm-hmm. And this might sound callous enough, I don't really have much sympathy for them, you know, talking about gates and stuff like that. I know that isn't great, and I want all clubs to succeed financially and be sustainable. But this is a problem of their own making.
But just to add balance, and that's what we are about here. We're not here to slay any club, any team, anyone. I think we always call it down the middle, as we see here. Just to add balance to it, as the host of this show, they would say that they do not maintain that pitch.
But it's up to them to provide the pitch. It is irrelevant who digs the hole and fills it in. Yes, Longford Town, we're playing here at Markets Field. That was pass inspection. It got through licensing or whatever the FEI did.
Well, that's another question, just to stop you in your tracks. And I raised this last week on the show when we were having a discussion about pitches, and little did we know we'd be back here again at square one this week. But yeah. I would love to know, does the pitch and the quality of the playing surface come into licensing at all?
Well, it's very hard to know if it does or not, because Mike made reference to
because
the FEI.
If it does, there's no way that pitch would have passed it in the off season. These issues have been going on for months. Anyone that looked at that pitch at the start of February, whenever it would have been, would have said this pitch is not suitable for football, never mind professional League of Ireland football. So it wouldn't have.
It's not suitable for human beings at the moment. You know, let's call it right. I was talking to people at Longford Smash last night who were on the pitch in Treaty on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
You could pick the ground up with your hands. You could pick the sod, roll it off the pitch.
Yeah, so just for anyone that's not aware, it was re-sodded in the area. There's one area of particular concern. You heard Mike say it, and it's quite a large area of the pitch. That was re-sodded in the lead up to the Longford game. I'm no pitch expert. For me, a week doesn't seem like enough time for a pitch for sods to bed in, particularly when the weather is poor. That's where the big issue was in this game. I believe it. The weather has been mentioned a lot, but it seems more it was a safety issue that the sods were not solid, that they would move under the players' feet, could lead to a serious injury, and that's why the game was called off. But going back to your original point, Gary, again, sorry for cutting across you there. You're making the suggestion that it doesn't matter who's providing the pitch. It's Treaty's job to have a pitch in place if they're going to play in this league. And you feel that, well, you feel it. It's obvious at the moment, because they're not able to play games on the pitch they have, that they're failing to provide that playing surface.
100%. It's in wholly, wholly within Treaty's remit to make sure the pitch is right. It is irrelevant if it's an outside company, a county council, a bunch of lads they found on the street that maintain it. That has nothing to do with the fact that Longford Town and other clubs haven't been able to play in Treaty this season. And Treaty, rightfully, are suffering from that with no income from home games. And it's totally within their doing, and I have no sympathy for them whatsoever. It's unfortunate, but I genuinely don't, because what has happened now is two clubs. I can't remember. Did Athlone travel?
No, I don't think so. No, I think it was called off that morning.
Perfect. But Longford Town fans, the club, even the kit man had the stuff ready to go in the ground and then pack all up and head back on. Like, it is... While the FEI, I'll come on to them now, don't worry. They're on the hit list too. But it's within Treaty's remit to have a playable pitch ready to go. Rain, Mike mentioned rain and all the torrential rain that was coming down between 1 o'clock and 4 o'clock. That did not cause the pitch to be in the state that it's in. That you can have people lifting up reams of sod with your hands. That's not based in reality at all. So, Mike, I understand that you have to fight the corner of the club, and it was, you know, and I also appreciate you coming on as well, but that's not real at all. Blaming the county council or their staff or whoever maintained that pitch is also irrelevant as well. It doesn't add anything to the conversation. It's just trying to shift blame off Treaty, who have a huge, huge element of blame to take on here. It's their job. If you take it as if Longford Town, my own club, don't have toilets at a game, What are people supposed to do? Or you go to the toilet in the ditch. Longford Town will face a heavy fine for that, and rightly so. part of your licensing is to have these things: toilets, chairs, covered areas, probably, and a load of other stuff. But you have to have a good pitch.
Well, again, we don't know that. We don't know what the how much of a pitch comes into light. That's something we might look and try and chase up, because I think I'll let you back in a second. You've raised some issues that maybe Treaty have to answer for. There's definitely big issues here. The FEI, what is their procedures? What's their protocols? And more importantly, what are they going to do and take and learn from this? We can't have a situation again where a team is traveling from one end of the country to the other and the game's called off 50 minutes before kickoff. Yes, we can maybe have it, whereas, as I said earlier with the incident with COVID a few years ago, it was a freak weather incident. This, we could see this coming. We were probably bigger fools for driving down the road and thinking this game was going to be on. We're to take blame for that. But we were going off an official league and two clubs that play in this league saying this game is going ahead. So all we could do as supporters was go and travel to this game. But the FEI, I think, have major, major, major questions to answer here. And as I said, what are they going to take from this? Or is it going to be another one of these? Let's move on. And in 3 or 4 months' time, we're going to be talking about a similar incident again. We can't have that happening.
Well, just taking this incident, the FEI still have, you know, forget about their procedures or anything like that. Like a child, a toddler can see that what went on is incorrect. So let's say Mike was talking about the procedures and processes in place. You know, a toddler could see that those procedures and processes aren't sufficient.
Yeah, they failed. They failed on the night. So when procedures and processes fail, any working organization says, right, what went wrong? How are we going to fix it? I just very much hope that that's going to be the case here.
Well, I have no faith that the FEI and the League of Ireland department directly have any desire or interest in changing anything. They have, if you even highlight that person, you mentioned them already, that person that viewed the pitch at 10:30 or 10 o'clock or whatever Friday morning. Now, not only should he be removed from the game completely. Like, I find myself, I sometimes think that, you know, I'm like a complete radical clown. because I said Derek Tomley should never be involved in the game again. And actually, just when I mentioned Derek Tomley, in the Northern Premier League, the IFA came out and banned a referee for some egregious conduct for 4 weeks that was appealed down to 2. But they came out and said, this was wrong. Mm-hmm. We can't tolerate this. This is what we're going to do about it. The FEI don't do that. It's their policy not to do that. It's, you know, patting everybody on the back. Oh, you'll get them next week. But that's not right. Like, if anyone seemingly outside of the FEI did something wrong, they would get reprimanded, and that would be the penalty. Mm-hmm. There seems to be no penalty here. Treaty don't seem to have been impacted at all, other than not getting a home gate, where they should have been fined. They should 100% should be fined for having an unplayable pitch like this. Because you mentioned 2 weeks ago that pitch was unplayable. There was other people that were saying that they saw pictures of it and they knew that was that the pitch was unplayable. People that know about pitches. So how is that possible?
Yeah, I can totally see your viewpoint here. Again, we'll wrap this up because we've spent a bit of time on it already, but I think it really needs discussion, because no supporter, no matter what club they support, wants to travel the length and breadth of the country and be left in a situation like Longford Town fans were left in Friday. So I think fans of teams, particularly in the First Division, will want to hear us discussing this. Again, though, you're just to probably go around in circles a bit here, but you're saying that you know, the pitch 2 weeks ago wasn't fit. Treaty will say they tried to rectify that. They got onto the LEDP. Sods were laid. They hoped that would rectify it. They got the FAI in, as we heard from Mike. They gave them advice on what to do. They followed that advice, and the pitch is playable.
Can I ask you one question? Just on the advice. So mm-hmm. the ring up FAI, oh, please, we have no pitch. So we don't know what we're doing, or whatever was said to the FAI. And FAI facilities came down and said, right, this is what you need to do. Did the FAI ring up Treaty and go, how'd you get on with that? Did they follow up with, here's our advice. Here, we are the guardians of football in this country. We're the guardians of the league. Here's what you need to do with the pitch. Did they follow up? Did they check it? did they check it, we'll say, 3 days before Longford Town's game? No, they didn't. Because, as I said, people could lift the sod off the ground. So it's not, I find it baffling that that this has occurred. And to be honest with you, I couldn't care less if I had to drive 1,000 miles for that to happen. I'd be annoyed, and I'm annoyed at the cost of everything. But that's not really bothering me that much, to be quite honest with you. It's the fact that we're here in 2022. We've moved on. We've made little changes, big changes, such as going from the winter to the summer league. But we're still talking about stuff that probably happened in 1994.
And probably wouldn't happen in most local leagues. I remember as a child, you'd get a text that 10 in the morning if you were meant to play, you know, 2 or 3 down the road somewhere in a local game, and no, pitch isn't playable, don't want people traveling when it, you know, it's not necessary. That happens at schoolboy level. This is the League of Ireland, and this happened on Friday night. So
one more question. If the FEI are entrusting clubs to get the pitches sorted with whatever methods they have, people and this and that and the other, why are they not entrusting these people to make a call on the pitch? We're getting some random official, local official, who don't know anything about him or his qualifications to decide on what a pitch, if a pitch is playable or not, to make this decision on. But you know, there was probably a groundsman down in Treaty who said that, look, this pitch isn't ready, it won't be ready for a month. But no, we can't listen to this man who's actually working on the pitch day in, day out, or whatever time schedule he's on. No, we'll get this other fella who the only interaction he has with the pitch is when he walks on it. Let him make the decision.
Yeah, because
it's truly baffling. And, you know, as you said it right, we could talk about this for hours. But, you know, as I said, I feel like I'm going crazy because we're hammering people, or I'm hammering the FAI on seemingly a regular basis over pitches.
Yeah, the basic of the game.
In this day and age.
The first thing you need for a game really is the pitch. So look, just to round up on this, obviously Treaty aren't the only team that's had games postponed in their home ground. Longford Town, opening day of the season, due to play Cove, that was called off. But the big difference was there was some doubt about the pitch. So a decision was made at, 10, 11 that morning?
I wasn't even out of bed.
Decision was made. Longford are playing Cove. Out of respect to Cove, we'll call the game off to be on the safe side. By that evening, the weather was absolutely fine. I probably would take a good guess that game probably could have gone ahead. Now, the pitch might have been great, Nick, but it probably would have been playable. But out of respect to Cove, it was called off. It's just a shame the same respect wasn't shown to Longford Town on Friday night. And that's where we'll leave it. But I personally can see where you're coming from, the point of view that maybe Treaty have to shoulder more of the responsibility. And I agree to a certain extent, certainly. But I would have a lot of questions for the FAI. And maybe we'll look and try and get some of those answers over the next while. Let's move on. And we're going to be quick with these because we've got a lot of games to get through. We'll try and make up for lost time. We'll go through the Friday results first in the First Division. Cork 2-0 winners against Cove in the Cork Derby. Gilcrease and Murphy on the score sheet. Bray lost 3-1 against Galway. Waterford 2-1 winners in their derby against Wexford. Junior and Patterson again on the score sheet there. And Cove Ramblers, they're the team to watch so far this season in the First Division. They were 3-2 winners on last night in Athlone. A hat-trick for Whitmarsh. Cork 2-0 winners at home to Waterford. What a result for them. Murphy on the score sheet again there. Keaton also scored. Galway, they kept up the pressure as well. 2-1 win against Treaty. So Treaty got a game in there away from home. And Walsh scoring again. I think he's got 3 already this season in his new role as a striker. And Longford Town 1, Bray Wanderers 2. A dreadful result and performance from the Town. And Bray, they answered the critics. That's where we'll start, Gary, very quickly on this one. Bray, they hit back when they needed it most. 3 defeats on the spin, but they bounced back with a win against Longford Town.
Yeah, what can be said here? I can't believe it. We're 2 games in to, you know, a rebranded Longford Town team, new manager, that, you know, widely new players. I don't really know. It's too early to say from any team that anybody's in trouble. But there are huge question marks over Longford Town, and they've only played 2 games, both at home. I was doing the stream, you were doing commentary, so you know, we can't watch the game as probably in depth as we would have liked. But certainly I've a number of question marks over some players already and their commitment, their interest, mm-hmm. their desire to actually do what they're supposed to do. We had an incident of one player roaring back to the fans in Section O. Now, probably, I will say, Section O deserve any amount of abuse back. They're well able to give it and deserve it back. But I can't believe that a player who's basically in the club a wet week thought it was okay to even interact with a fan in that manner was baffling. And that's something that Gary Cronin, unfortunately, needs to deal with when Longford Town have only played two games. On the general performance, it was crazy to believe that Longford Town weren't 3-4, 5-0 up within maybe 20 minutes.
Yeah.
They lay down badly and made some stupid mistakes at the back, couldn't clear their lines, and basically let Bray in. Very, very, very troubling performance. And unfortunately, I'm going to make a similar mistake on Friday and go down to Ferrycarrig Park, and I'm not looking forward to it.
Yeah,
which is crazy to say. Even after last season, we said it after last night. Just I thought it was interesting. We looked at Longford Town lose 25 games last year.
Mm-hmm.
Last night was worse than any of those 25.
Yeah, standard and the level of football just was so poor in the game. I mean, Bray didn't have to do anything to win this. Their two goals came against the run of play. I will say Rob Manley, he was absolutely excellent for Bray. There were some good individual performances on their behalf, but they really didn't have to work that hard to score their two goals.
I will say one thing. Bray are very bad.
Well, I'm glad you said it, because it would have sounded like sour grapes if I had said it. But
No. Like I couldn't understand. Like, I know Longford Town scored in the 7th or 8th minute or something like that. Longford, and to be fair, still made a meal of getting the ball in the net, but Sam Verdon eventually buried it. But Longford Town made chance after chance after chance. Bray were, the brain was in cuckoo land. There was a throw in just down in front of us in the gantry, and there were just players not even looking at the ball.
Yeah, they all turned their back.
Yeah,
there were sixes or sevens at the back. Longford had used that, should have been 4 or 5 up. Their finishing was woeful. But then once they conceded the two goals, they just showed no character at all, really.
No.
It was such a poor second half. And Bray, once they got their noses in front, typical Pat Devlin performance. They were killing the clock. They were doing everything to slow down the game. It was just horrific to watch. And the referee, Alan Patchell, my goodness.
Lad.
This wasn't a dirty game. There was no anything in the game, and he lost control of the game. He had no control over proceedings. Confusion with substitutes. A player came on before he was supposed to come on. He booked him. I don't know, did that player actually come on in the end? It was, he had no control over what was going on the pitch. Stop, start, stop, start, stop, start. Yeah. So that suited Bray down to the ground. They ran out 2-1 winners, but I wasn't overly impressed with them. If Longford had beaten them last night, we probably would be talking more about Bray, because they were beaten again on Friday. There was a lot of supporter discontent on the night. There was some video clips online of supporters calling for Pat Devlin's head. But we'll see how Bray can, if they can build on this result against Longford now, because maybe their confidence will be up. Rob Manley, he'll get goals, sort of, no doubt. He didn't score last night, but he was a huge threat. But I think there's going to be a lot of reliance on Manley and that team, the way they play. They're very, very direct, Bray. So they capitalised against a really poor Longford Town defence last night, but they ran out 2-1 winners. We'll just fly through these other results. It's been a good couple of days for Cork, Gary.
Well, it truly has, yeah. I thought they had a good win against Cove, but last night was a real test. You know, that was the real, where are we going to go this season? And they really passed it with flying colours, didn't they? Great, great performance.
How big of an advantage is the home support going to be, is particularly if they're going well? They're getting 4,000 or 5,000 there, even on Monday nights. That's not going to be something a lot of First Division players are familiar with. Now, Waterford would be from being the Premier last season, but could be worth a couple of points to them.
It probably will be worth a couple of points. Make no mistake about it. You know, for my sins, I've never been in Turner's Cross. I think it's the only ground I've never been in the country. So
I will not be going if Longford Town keep playing the way they're playing.
absolutely not. But it certainly will make a difference, and you know, it'll certainly draw out that, you know, that last bit of percent you need to get over the line, or, you know, make that tackle or go the extra couple of yards when you have that support behind you. Make no mistake about it. It is a huge benefit, especially when, you know, lads talking about what a graveyard the First Division is. Actually, heard players last night coming into the ground refer to it as a graveyard, which I just found funny, because I thought, you know, you wouldn't really think of players thinking of it like that. But, you know, they do, and they want to get out of it. It's really important for them to get out of this division. You even heard A last week talk about it. So 100%, the fans will be pushing them on. One thing I hope for is that Cork don't budget for 4,000 or 5,000 every game.
And what about their neighbours, Cove? Good bounce back for them. They're winning at Lone last night. They did it in dramatic circumstances. Mm. It looks like Cove are going to be the team to watch this year. They're starting to score goals, which is great, but they leak plenty as well. But that Lone defence, it just looks hopeless at the minute.
Lord. I don't know if anyone has seen the winning goal for Cove. God bless us. You know, injury time, what, 93 minutes on the clock or something like that. And the defender just boots it into the middle of the field to prevent it going out from a corner. It's intercepted, headed into Whitmarsh, was it?
Yeah.
And
he got a hat-trick, Whitmarsh.
Oh, did he? Right. And nods it in. I think there was a bit of a shot blocked, and then he gets the rebound himself or something like that, but gets the win. When, you know, a point for Athlone would have been a good result.
Steady the ship,
absolutely. You know, Cove and are probably looking at Athlone, right? We need to finish above these, you know what I mean? Like, they're probably in similar positions of rebuilding. So you could look at it like, right, point at home, not the best. We would have rather the win, but we'll take it. And then to throw it away like that is just tragic stuff. So very good, very, you know, huge 3 points for Cove, especially after the Munster derby and then travelling to Athlone as well. So they'll be delighted with that.
And finally, for now, any teams we didn't cover there, we'll cover them obviously in the preview section. But Galway, good couple of days for them as well. They had the win against Bray, and they followed it up with a win against Treaty. And Stephen Walsh is on fire. Who would have believed it?
Yeah, shocking. That fella plays everywhere. Like, left back, right back. Probably the only position he hasn't played is in goals. But he got a great goal last night. He seems to be unstoppable at the minute, but I think probably the more important result was the away win in Bray. I think there could have been a reaction. Longford Town were on the end of the reaction from Bray, but a 3-1 beaten down in the Carlisle grounds for Galway, that was a huge result.
I expected them to win in Galway. I actually thought the Treaty game was probably tougher.
I know, but I think mentally, like, you would have been wary of Bray in some way, that they would have got a response. But they cut that out and won comfortably. What Longford Town should have done last night.
I suppose it sends out a message to win on the road so comfortably as well. It sends out a message at home. Maybe it's probably the opposite. You might be a bit nervous going into the home game. You know, a lot of people are turning out to see you. There's pressure there. You're the favourites, expected to win. So you have to deal with that. Whereas they're going to the Carlisle, and they're probably thinking, right, if we get a draw here, no one's really going to hammer us, but we don't want to lose this. But to go and win at 3-1, that was a great result for them.
100%. Yeah, no, I think, you know, that really set them up. I was not delighted, but I was, you know, I actually thought that beating for Bray on Friday night would have done Longford a favour. Fortunately, I was well wrong with that one, but I think it just was the right tonic for Galway. Not that they needed it, but it just added a bit of icing on the cake, as the fella said, and set them up for Monday. So yeah, 5 goals in 2 games. And a Friday, Monday schedule, great couple of results for them.
We'll move on to the Premier Division again. I'll read out the results and then we'll pick up the key talking points. Drogheda 0, Sligo 3. Anyone that listened to the show last week, John Breyer predicting a Drogheda win, that was madness. So we went double your money on this one. It was worth double in the predictions league. So myself and Gary, we didn't get the correct score, unfortunately. We weren't far away. I think the two of us might have had maybe 2-0 or 2-1, but it ended 3 3-0 to Sligo. So we got a couple of points there. So that was the result there. 3-0 to Sligo against Drogheda. Yeah, so moving on to Shells 1, Dundalk 1, Pat Hooban and Boyd from the penalty spot here. So these two teams becoming something of draw specialists. 1-1 the scoreline there. Hearts beating 2-0 at home by Pat's Owen Doyle on the score sheet for the Saints. Rovers, they won the Dublin Derby against Bowes by a goal to nil. Rory Gaffney, the hero on the night. Then last night, Bowes won, Shells won again, another draw for Shells. Another draw for Dundalk. They drew 0-0 with Shamrock Rovers. Derry were 2-0 winners against Drogheda. Our friend McGonagall won another brilliant goal in that one. Sligo, they scored three again, this time against Finn Harps. And it was Keena that got all three there for the Bitter Red. And Pat's 2, UCD 0. And both of the Doyles, Mark and Owen, on the score sheet in that one. So what do you want to pick up on first of all, Gary? Where's the main discussion points here?
Well, I suppose the bit of skill by Stephen Mallon there on Friday in Talla. I think that was beautiful.
But doesn't get you points, though.
Doesn't get you points. Exactly what I was going to say. Everybody raving about the skill and Bowes come away with nothing. Fortunately, that seems to be the motto of Bowes, really. Which is disappointing for them and their fans, but Rovers did exactly what they needed to do, get the win, and Dublin is green and white. So we can talk about Bowes forever, but unfortunately it was no points. And then their second derby of the few days against Shells, back in Daly Mount, they could have done with a better reaction than they got. I think Rory Feely got sent off.
He did.
And I'm not a big fan of Rory. But I put actually a good friend of mine messaged me again about him, and basically Sean Boyd walking onto the pitch and scoring within minutes, or a minute, was particularly disappointing. But unfortunately, it's the same old story again for Bowes.
Yeah, I suppose you can be disappointed from a Bowes point of view. They're at home and they haven't capitalised against a Shells team who aren't exactly flying at the moment.
No.
From a Shells point of view, though, they'll have to be disappointed, surely, because they've played the last 20 minutes with an extra man, and it's another draw for them. They're just not scoring enough goals. And it's not only that, they're not really creating the chances either. I've been at a couple of their games. I've watched plenty of them online and on the streams and all the rest, and they're very boring to watch so far this season, I have to say.
Oh, yeah, it's woeful stuff. Like, I think Duff is playing it quite safe. Not really taking many risks. And, there was an opportunity there. That would have been huge for Shelburne if they won that game last night. But they didn't really do anything to make that happen. They're 3 draws in their last 4. Is that type of form going to be worthwhile in trying to stay up and out with the playoffs and stuff like that? I'm not sure if it's going to be over the course of a season. They're going to need to start throwing a bit more at it and trying to win a couple of games. But there was a huge opportunity there last night to beat Bowes when they were down to 10 men, and they didn't take it and didn't really attempt to take it, it looked like.
Look, it's early on in the season, but the question you ask, will the type of form they're showing now be enough to keep them out of the playoff? It probably will, Gary, because I think the 3 teams below them are going to be the bottom 3. We can argue over what order, but Drogheda, Harps and UCD look particularly weak this season.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I called Shelburne to be 7th, and I questioned myself there a couple of weeks ago, but I think based on what we've seen from the 3 teams below them, it's going to be very difficult for them to get out of that position. I think it's going to be a bit of a musical chair job between Drogheda, UCD and Harps.
Yeah.
And come the end of the season, for the 2 spots that are there, I think it's going to be an achievement to get into the playoffs and try and stay up that way. And then I think what's going to happen is one of the 3, probably Harps, are going to end up in 8th and probably be a bit comfortable, and it might be just a bit of a fight between UCD and Drogheda to get into the playoffs. So
I wouldn't see anyone. I think that bottom three, I don't think there'll be a huge amount between them. So that's the bottom of the table covered up towards the top. What a turnaround from St. Pat's. Is that three on the spin now for them after their two defeats early on in the season? They've bounced back with some massive results. The win against Shamrock Rovers and 2-0 wins this week. They beat UCD by 2-0 last night. And they were 2-0 winners against Finn Harps as well. So not only starting to score goals now, keeping clean sheets as well. So they're top on 12. Sligo second on 11. What a start they have. The surprise package, we all wrote them off, but proven us all wrong so far. Derry, they're only a point off the top as well. And they had a 2-0 win last night as well. So they're keeping clean sheets as well. Shamrock Rovers is the one we might start with. I wasn't at the game last night, obviously, because it was a Longford game. But herself was there. And I was speaking to a couple of lads at work today that were at it. They were very surprised with Shamrock Rovers, but when they gave me their debrief, it sounded like something very similar to the game me and you went and watched, Norrie, last year. Shamrock Rovers, lots of easy possession and just nothing really up top.
Yeah, well, look, if people are saying that that's the same, then you really have to look at Stephen Bradley. For some reason, I went to about like 40-odd Longford Town games last year. I remember that Dundalk Rovers game in Oriel more than a lot of them, the lot of Longford Town games I went to last season, because I couldn't get over with the quality they have on the pitch. They were all falling over each other in midfield or pass the ball 2 yards to me.
Can I just give you their lineup from last night? So they played with a back five, Andy Lyons, Hoare, Lopez, Grace,
back
and Cotter,
five.
And Cotter. So two wing backs there in Lyons and Cotter. But then this is their midfield. Byrne, who came off early, Towell, O'Neill, Mandreou, and Burke's playing up front, even though he's not really a natural striker. There's far too many midfielders on the pitch.
Wow.
I mean, the fullbacks, where's the space for them? I mean, there's so many bodies in front of them. Unless Mandreou, O'Neill, Towell, and Byrne are going to stay real central. But then it becomes too congested in the middle. It very much sounds like exactly the game we watched last year. All these bodies going nowhere, the ball going nowhere, but Rovers having all the possession, but not creating anything. Now, to be fair, Shepherd has made some brilliant saves. Looking back at the highlights, Nathan Shepherd, the dog goalkeeper, he had a really good night at the office. So they did obviously create some chances, Shamrock Rovers.
But they're going to.
Exactly. The players' individual quality they have, they're going to. But are they getting the best out of that team at the minute, the best out of that squad? No.
You'd really have to question it. But if it was anything like that game last year, like they're just falling across each other, playing nothing passes to one another, going nowhere. It's really, really frustrating to watch because I was expecting a huge game up there last year. I would have expected a bit more out of this game as well. But they seem to be limiting themselves because they've nowhere to go with it. If you imagine Jack Byrne on, you know, picks up the ball in midfield and he doesn't have a load of his own players in his own way, you know, he goes up, tries to play forward, and Graham Burke, with the best will in the world, probably just can't play as a striker in a striker role. I haven't seen the game, so someone else might correct me, but like, was he playing around midfield? Was he being drawn back into his natural position?
Probably a bit of a false nine, I'd imagine, really, is kind of the player he appeals to me.
There's no real outlet, like.
Again,
I'd have to really question, though, just on that, I'd have to question Bradley. Like, how is this, you know, four central attacking-type midfielders, maybe Garrow O'Neill, probably more of a defensive midfielder, but Byrne, Towell, Mandreou and Burke on the one pitch. I don't see how that works.
Yeah, again, you have to maybe take the stats you get online sometimes with a pinch of salt, but according to Flash Score here anyway, actually Dundalk had more of the possession, 52%. Dundalk had more shots off target. Shots on target was level. I mentioned the good saves that Shepherd made, but Patrick Hooban missed a sitter late in the day as well. So Rovers might have even been lucky in the end to come out of Oriel with a point. But look, there's nothing to say that Rovers won't do what they did last year. They'll find the gears. They'll get the late goals, all the rest, and they could easily go on and win this league by quite a comfortable margin. But at the moment, they're not motoring. And I still think that maybe Stephen Bradley doesn't know his best 11. He sticks with, we discussed this last week, he seems to stick with an 11. He'll rotate for the midweek games. And then no matter how well you play, you'll get the 11. But I don't know. Is that the best system for Shamrock Rovers? I just think there's too many fullbacks or there's too many midfielders on the pitch. I just think they're really lacking in something up in the final third in terms of a striker.
Yeah, he definitely has a bit of John Caulfieldites, like, you know, a lot of the same type of player on the pitch. But it doesn't seem like they have a game plan. You know, right, we have five brilliant attacking midfielders. Right, we're going to ram them all on the one pitch and kind of let them at it. It isn't going to work, like, you know what I mean? Like, you need, that's where the manager comes in and makes it all tick. I don't see that happening. And he, you know, you mentioned that he doesn't know his best 11. He needs to find it quick. He needs to find it quick, because while I still believe, even if they continue on this, you know, not wonderful form, I think they will, their individual quality will just get it right and start blasting teams away later on in the season. But will that be enough to catch the teams above them, you know, later on in the season? Because you would expect, you know, the like of Pats and Sligo. I'm still not convinced of their staying ability. Again, I look to Derry. Like, they already have a game in hand over Shamrock Rovers, and they're a point ahead. So, I think Stephen Bradley needs to really take a look at it and try and make a stick with a team instead of oaring in so many midfielders.
Yeah, look, he can't win, really, Bradley. We were criticising him last week that, you know, he's sticking with a team, and if you play well, you're not getting in. But then he rotates. He's made a lot of rotations for this Dundalk game. It's almost like he has too many options, because even the four players he brings off the bench last night, Green, Gaffney, Ferrugia, and the young man Imaku, who looks a real player. I mean, four subs, Dundalk only made two. So it just looks like he has so many options that it's becoming a little bit of a headache.
It certainly does, but like, I would have thought, would Imaku not have been a good shout to start that game last night up front, and then maybe let Gaffney come on, or even stick Burke on up front later on in the game?
Gaffney had scored in the previous one, so you thought maybe he'd start. I know he's a little bit older, but start him, see how he gets on.
But he only has
to bring a player like Burke on. Look, we can all play Football Manager. It's Bradley that has to pick this team, but at the moment, I don't think he's getting the best out of what he has there. Slow start to the season for them. You touched on Sligo, really good start, and we touched on Keane last week. Looks an absolute player, but we've touched on it before. They've had good starts and haven't been able to maintain it. That'll be the big challenge for them. I think that's pretty much everyone we really want to cover, unless there's something else you have for us.
Just on Pat's great win up in Harps, thought there were, I don't think they were in any danger at all throughout that game. So fair play to them. It was a good away win. I think Owen Doyle got his first goal in that game as well, didn't he?
First goal of the season. I'm not sure if it was his first. I think he's got a couple already, has he?
I don't think so.
Oh, maybe you're right. As ever, we have the stats in front of us and prepared for the podcast. So
Yeah. Well, best prepared pod in the league. No, I think he got an old header that kind of...
He scored in the President's Cup anyway, but aside from that, I
wouldn't mind that.
I thought he had scored in the league.
No, I think that was his first game. He didn't score. No, I don't think he scored. But okay. Anyway, let's say I'm right. Well, I normally am. Yeah, no, he didn't score. That was his first goal against Harps on Friday. So
okay, well, that can only be a good thing.
Yeah, started with something new, but. No, it was good to see that. I thought, you know, they were good in that game, and then, you know, they probably had an easy Monday night game, you know, probably a great Monday, you know, when you're playing a Friday and a Monday, there's a bit of a quick turnaround and everything like that, but the UCD at home would have been a great option for
The stats make it look like it was a rather one-sided game as well. 12 shots off target, 5 on target. UCD just 1 shot on target and 2 off target. Pats with more of the ball as well, so it looked like a nice home game for them to have.
Did you say 12 shots off target?
Yeah.
Oh Lord, how do you manage that? Jesus, Tim Clancy would want them to have them out on the training pitch. 12 shots off target, Lord bless us.
And again, you have to take these stats with a little pinch of salt, I think, at times, but it looks like they did dominate the game.
Yeah, I know. I'd have a bit of faith in it, considering, you know, it's Sport Radar and Genius that
no, we don't need all the geeky stats. Techie.
I'm just saying that they're reliable stats, and they have people at all the games, so I'd have some faith in them. But 12 shots off target, my God, even if it was 10,
yeah,
that's something to work on. But look, they're on top looking down, so they'll be happy enough with that early on.
We'll move on to the predictions now. We're going to get stuck into the Premier Division games first, and we'll start with UCD against Bose. This is a good opportunity for Bose to put some of those frustrations of recent games behind them.
I think it has to be. Not coming up with a win in either game on Friday and Monday is disappointing or whatever, but the big derby on Friday, right, you'd suffer that. But home draw against Shells, if you look at the game, they ended up with 10 men, so they'd be happy enough with that. But not fantastic. They're down in sixth, one win so far this season. Not fantastic. You'd really want to get motoring a bit quicker than they are. So I'm going to say 2-0 Bows, but could be an opportunity for UCD to get a team that are not playing fantastic.
I don't see it. To be honest, I've lost faith in UCD already this season.
I think
we suggested this at the time. I think they missed the boat with them first couple of games, and particularly the two home games against Harps. I think they missed a trick there. You get a win, confidence levels are up, but they're looking particularly leaky over the last few weeks, and I think Bowes will take out some of that recent frustration. I'm following your prediction. I'm going to go 2-0.
Yeah, I do think Bowes will do it, but I'm just not liking the way Bowes are going at it at the minute. They could fill the togs here, and UCD could surprise everybody. I know it's easy said, but look, I'll stick with Bowes at 2-0, but do you think UCD will ever change their spots? And, they seem to be a completely different team from last season. The really breaks have been stuck on them. So, I think that they find it difficult to play like that. So I'm not sure if they don't change.
It
won't go anywhere.
This sounds a bit like the conversations we were having in the car about Longford last season. What if we try and play on the front foot a bit more? What if we sit back a bit more? The simple fact is they're just outclassed at this level. I think that's it. I think they're very much going to be the bottom side. And I think they might not be caught adrift, given that Drogheda and Harps look particularly weak this season. So they might just have a chance of staying in there. And maybe in the summer they can do something. I don't know. But it's probably likely they'll get weaker as opposed to stronger in the summer. So I think UCD look nailed on for the bottom spot. We'll move on. This should be a humdinger. Derry against Pats. In the Brandywell.
Well, Derry got a bit of bad news today with Michael Duffy being injured. I think he fractured a bone in his leg. So
then again, they've done all right up until this point. I know he came on for the last few minutes last night, but they've done okay, haven't they?
Yeah, no, they have.
You're right. It's a huge blow.
But it is. For this game, I think, Pats are on a 3-game winning streak. That's going to be hard stopped, even if it is up in the Brandywell. But I'm going to have faith in Derry here and Rory Higgins. I'm going to go 2-1 to Derry. I think it's going to be a tight old game, but I think Derry will just have enough. The Brandywell has been rocking so far this season, and I think it'll be rocking again come Friday. So 2-1 to Derry for me.
I'm full of contradictions this week. I said it should be a humdinger, but I agree with you. I think it'll be a tight one, and both teams keeping clean sheets. Both teams keeping clean sheets today, which will delight both managers, because that was kind of the concern we had about them at the start of the season. Particularly Pats, they looked really loaded up front, a bit weak at the back, but maybe them couple of defeats has addressed that. They've obviously worked on something in the training ground. They're getting the balance a bit more better. Whereas Derry, again, we talked about the players like McGonagall, all the attacking players they brought in, but they were leaking a couple of goals early on in the game or early in the season, but they've cut that out now. So I think this might be a game where the two teams cancel each other out. Hopefully we'll get some goals. I'm going to go for a 0-0.
Oh, God.
Yep.
I don't see that. I think, particularly McGonagall got another two last night. I think No, I think they'll get another two on Friday and beat Pats 2-1.
Look, McGonagall will fancy his chances. Owen Doyle will fancy his chances. Mark Doyle. But the defenders on both teams, they'll be saying, well, look, we're keeping the clean sheet, so come and give us your best. So we'll see how that plays out. Drogheda against Dundalk, the Louth derby.
Janie Mac. Tough one here, but I think this game is in Oriel, isn't it?
No, it's in Head in the Game Park. And of course, these teams met in pre-season. Drogheda won the Jim Blown Cup, 2-1 in Oriel. But Dundalk look a different animal since then. I've been impressed with Dundalk. 5 draws, though, already this season. They really are the draw specialists. I think O'Donnell want to start turning those points into 3 points. This looks a good opportunity because Drogheda really are struggling.
Yeah, I think Drogheda are dirt, to be quite honest. I don't see them getting close to Dundalk in this game.
Tell us how you really feel.
I just not impressed with Drogheda by any stretch, and I don't see how anybody else could be. Their only game that they won was a 4-2 win against Drogheda. Against UCD, sorry. And they still let UCD, who hadn't scored up to that point, score 2.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was a class goal from my man Liam Kerrigan, but you know, poor defending for UCD's first goal at the back. You know, it's they really, yeah, I have no confidence in them at all. I think Dundalk are going to win. Because it's a loud derby, I'm going to just say 1-0 to Dundalk.
Yeah, I get that feeling that it might be a narrow win for Dundalk, but I strongly fancy them here. I'm going to go 2-1. They kept the clean sheet against Rovers, which should do the back four, and the goalkeeper confidence levels the world look good, but they'll be disappointed not to have won the game in Talca. They made a really bad mistake there, gave away a penalty when the game was there to be won, really, against the Shells team who weren't creating a whole pile. So I think they let 2 slip there. Good point for them against Rovers. But as I said, they really need to start turning points into 3 points now. This is a great opportunity. So I'll go 2-1. I'm not sure who's going to score for Drogheda, but we've said it before, though, this Dundalk back four, they do seem to just give you a chance from time to time. So maybe a set piece or something like that, or Williams or Lyons. Someone might just pop up with a goal for Drogheda, but I think Dundalk will have too much for them.
Yeah, no, I fully agree. I'm just going to go stick with the 1-0. I just don't see Dundalk giving up a goal here. You know, and I'm not really sure who would get the goals for Drogheda in this game. So, no, I'm going to stick with the 1-0 to Dundalk.
Now, this is a huge game down at the other half of the table, although Shells will tell you they advise on climbing the table. It's Shelburne against Finn Harps. I can see this being a very, very tight affair, but again, Shells are a team that need to start turning draws into wins. This is a good opportunity at home against Harps.
Oh, God. What state of football are we going to see on this game on Friday? What do you think?
Yeah, I think this will be fairly dour.
Oh, I think dour is being kind.
I'm just trying to recall in one of the Longford Town group chats today, there was a bit of a post-match reaction to last night's game. Somebody just said this morning, they're still not sure that was a game of football they watched last night. And I just hope that this isn't going to be the same.
Oh, I can certainly see it. I think, you know, it's a big opportunity for Harps here to put a marker down against one of the relegation rivals. Probably not, really. I think as the season goes on, I think Shells might be able to just pull it out with a fire and keep out of this mess. But I think Harps are going to be down in it. I think Shelburne, it's been a long time since Shelburne won. You know, they won 2-0 against, it was Drogheda. But that's a long time ago now.
There was nothing in the game. It was two mistakes from Drogheda. Both of these teams are struggling massively to create chances, but particularly Harps. Like I touched on with UCD, maybe missing the ball for their earlier games. Harps missed a massive trick that night in Oriel. Should have been 3-4-0 up at halftime.
Yeah,
but that was
right.
Again all defensive mistakes that they almost capitalized on. They didn't create a huge pile. Neither of these teams are creating a whole pile. The only difference here might be Sean Boyd's got a couple of goals now in recent weeks. Going up against his former club here, could he maybe be the difference? Could they get a scrappy old 1-0 here, Shells?
I certainly believe they can. I think with the like of Boyd and Coyle going to Shells, it'll be an extra bit of bite to Shelburne. I'm going to go 1-0 Shells. I think I'm not... I'm not confident that there'll be any quality in this game at all. It might be a mistake that they capitalize on. It could be a banger from Aidan Irvine in midfield. I don't know. But I think Harps, the only bit of quality that they've had this season at all is Heary and Connolly linking up for their goal against Bowes. I haven't seen anything since or before that, and I don't think they're going to be able to change it going down to Talca. I think it'll be a great crowd there as well. I think this is a huge line for Shelburne to cross. Get 3 points, kick on and keep them out of that mess below them. 1-0 to Shells.
Yeah, I'm going to go 0-0. I do think if anyone's going to win it, it'll be Shells, but I just have no great faith in Shells. As I said earlier in the show, I've seen a lot of them this season and they bore me.
Yeah, well, the boring, absolutely. 100% I can see that. You wouldn't be excited to watch a Shells match, and you know that's just the truth. I don't see how you would be. But I think there's a lot at stake here for Shelburne in particular, so I'm going to go 1-0.
Yeah, aside from the duffer, I think there was some bit of hullabaloo over another interview he gave there. Or somebody sent me a clip. I didn't get time to look at it today, but yeah, it seemed to have a good few retweets and likes under, so he said something, and I just didn't get time to listen back. But take the duff factor out, and I think we really wouldn't be talking a whole pile about Shells this year, because they haven't really achieved much in the opening part of this season.
No, they haven't. But I think, you know, no one will care about this if they stay up. They won't care what happened, you know, last March when you're looking back on it in November. So I think the priority is keep out of the relegation battle at all costs, and then we can look on to next season.
We'll move on. It's the Rovers derby, Shamrock Rovers against Sligo Rovers. Shamrock Rovers just stuttering in that game against Dundalk, and Sligo, they're absolutely flying. But this is probably an acid test now for Sligo, despite the fact Shamrock Rovers haven't been firing on all cylinders early on this season. They've lost a couple of games, that draw against Dundalk last time. It's still a big test for Sligo to go up and try and beat the champions in their own backyard.
It is. I don't see them doing it. I think Shamrock Rovers will have too much. I think they'll understand that their form hasn't been great in the early part of the season. They've a good opportunity here to. I'm not sure. Like if I'm a Shamrock Rovers player, like, would you be scared of Sligo coming down to Talla? Would you be like, oh God, we're going to be in for a game here? I don't think you would be. Even if Sligo haven't even lost the game yet.
But I don't think Shamrock Rovers should have that attitude going into every game. Surely they should think, we're Shamrock Rovers, we're the dogs, you know what, we're going to win every game. That should be the attitude. Given
No, it is the attitude, but like, you know, if Bowes are coming to Talla, yeah, you know, you're in for a game. Like, I'm not saying that you shouldn't be thinking, oh, I think Bowes or Shamrock Rovers fans, yeah, we're going to beat the crap out of whoever we're looking at. But I think in particular, they're not going to be overly concerned about Sligo coming to town. I'm going to go for a 2-1 win to Shamrock Rovers. I still would have reservations about how they get those goals, but I just think that they'll have the ability to iron out the mistakes. Like, if you look at it, they had an all right win on Friday in a big game for them. A poor nil-all draw, but certainly with question marks over how they set up and the personnel that they put on the pitch to start a game. I think Stephen Bradley has to make changes into how he approaches the game, because I would fear that he's just going, right, we put on these lads, they're the best lads we have, and let them do it. I can't see the direction that Bradley is putting into the players before they start a game. And I think that proved last night. A draw that they probably could have done. Not that they could have done without, but that they could have won that game. I'm going to go 2-1 Shamrock Rovers. Hopefully, Bradley starts with. I'd like to see a Maku start, but I think he'll go with Gaffney.
Yeah, I disagree with you that they're not going to fear Sligo coming up, and I don't think they'll fear them, but I certainly think there's big pressure on Shamrock Rovers here, because the last two seasons when they've won the title, they've made all. They've been out in front, and they've had that lead and they've built it up, and the opposition has just fallen away. How will they respond if they were to lose this game? And they're playing catch up early on in the season. Now, it's still a very minimal gap from them to the top and a long, long time to go in the season. But it would be interesting to see how Rovers would play catch up and how they'd play that role. So I think this is a tough game for them. Sligo coming up full of confidence. I don't think Sligo Rovers will fear Shamrock Rovers at the moment. I think they'll look at it and say, this is a great opportunity, a golden opportunity that we haven't really had in the last few years to go to Tala, get a big result. I can see midfields cancelling each other out a little bit here. I'm going to go for a draw. I'm going to go for my old reliable. It's the first time this week, which is surprising, but I'm going for a 1-1.
Yeah, fair enough. I don't mean that like no one should fear Sligo. I just feel... I just see Shamrock Rovers looking at, we're just going to obliterate these lads and that'll be it.
I think there's pressure on them there, so we'll see. And as we said, all these personalities, all these players to try and keep happy, try and get everyone minutes, but try and keep a structured team at the same time while you're making all these rotations. Not easy. Not easy.
No, it's not. It's certainly not. It's none of it's handy, but that's up to Stephen Bradley to do. And look, a full-time team, they should have no issue in doing it.
It's probably, again, when we had Luke Dennison on the show here last week, the Longford Town goalie, we spoke about the lack of opportunities he had over the last few seasons because the cup competitions, the minor cup competitions, the Leinster Senior Cup, the EA Sports Cup, they're gone for now anyway. That's probably an issue for Stephen Bradley as well. You're talking about Amaku there. They're the sort of games he would be getting game time in. There's other players in the squad there that would benefit from playing in those games. They're not there anymore. Yeah. It's the league, and it's a long way before there's the FAI Cup. So it's very difficult to keep all these players happy. So he's got a challenge on his hands there. And certainly it's harder to keep players happy when results aren't going their way. So it's a big game for them there on Friday night in Tala. Let's move on to the First Division. And another Munster derby this season, of course. And it's Treaty Well. Actually, will we make predictions on whether this game will go ahead? Because I put good money on it that it won't.
No, I don't think we should even bother trying to put...
I'll give you a point if you correctly predict whether it'll be on or off. I'm going to say it'll be off.
I'll tell you what. We'll 1 point to say that it's on or off, and then what day it'll be called off.
Correct score on the day.
Yeah.
That's a tough one. It'll be off. Do you agree with me on that?
Yeah.
Okay. We're both going for it off. Pitch inspection there tomorrow, or precautionary, whatever the term is. Surely they've been working on it since the Longford game.
I have no idea.
As I said earlier, I'm no pitch expert, but trying to lay down fresh sodden, it doesn't just happen overnight, even a week. I don't think that was enough time between games. So I'd say this will be called off tomorrow.
Perfect. I say the same. I think we talked enough about it. I obviously animated enough about it. I don't think anything that's going on is down related to the pitch is good enough. But I think they'll... Between the Treaty and the FAI, they'll do the right thing and get it called off tomorrow, which is what should have been done last week, but obviously wasn't.
Our most thrilling preview ever. Let's move on to Athlone against Galway. This is a derby as well. Galway should be, they'll be looking at this as a very comfortable win for them, surely.
Yeah, definitely, especially after Athlone filling their togs last night. I think they'll just have to look at this and go, if we have makings on winning this division, these are the types of games that we need to be just winning at our ease without any question about it whatsoever. I'm going to go 3-0 Galway.
I'm going 3-1 because I think Athlone have still scored in every game this season, but they've taken a few pumpings as well. They must have conceded they've conceded two or more in every game so far anyway, if I recall rightly. But they have scored in every game, so I'm going to go 3-1 to Galway. We'll move on. Cove against Bray. Cove off the back of that win, that late win against that lone take on the Bray side, who got their first win of the season. So both teams going into this with a little bit of confidence. I'd have a little bit of a fancy for Cove in this one.
I think both teams are coming off a high. You know, particularly Bray, because of how poorly they've been so far this season. Like, they've been utter dirt, and while they weren't great last night, Longford Town made them look into a really good, a decent outfit, which I would question if they are that, even that. But they bet Longford Town, they did what they needed to do, they turned it around. I think there's a lot at stake here in this game. But also Cove, you know, they bit sore after the Munster Derby on last Friday, get the late winner last night. Surely they'll be on a high. I think there's going to be I'm going to stick with Cove down in St. Coleman's Park. I'm going to go 2-1 to Cove.
Now, I did say I have a strong feeling towards Cove for this one. But what I mean there, I think this is a good opportunity for them. But I think they might just come up short. I'm going to go for a draw on this one. I'm going to go 1-1 because I thought Manly looked back to his best last night. He didn't score for Bray. But he'll be looking at this defence and saying, my God, they've conceded a lot of goals. If I get any sort of service here, I should be on the score sheet. But Cove will look at Bray, they'll say, there are no great shakes, we're at home here. Difficult pitch, tight pitch, we've said it all before about going down to St. Coleman's. 1-1.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I think, while Rob Manley was good last night, and I'm a huge fan of Rob, the service that he's getting is not great.
It's a bit like last season. It's just lumping it into the channel and saying, go and run after that, Rob, even if you've run out to the corner flag, and then you can try and beat three men when you get it, and just you do what you have to do, Rob. We're not going to give you any great service.
Yeah, like there was a couple of decent balls last night into Rob. There was one that Luke Dennison cleared with more than one question mark on. I thought Luke had a good game, but he could have been in butter there last night, make no mistake. I would just have question marks over their ability to give Rob Manley good quality chances. And, you know, that has proved before the game against Longford Town last night. But he did run onto a couple of chances, and one of the true balls on him ended up in a goal for Bray last night because of Town's inability to clear or kick a ball, actually. Not even clear is
that
too technical.
As it was, yep.
They couldn't kick it.
Couldn't kick the ball.
Couldn't kick the ball.
What went wrong, lads? Well, we couldn't kick the ball.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, yeah, you can't kick the ball. Oh, huh? Well.
There you go.
Jesus. But look, no, I'm going to stick 2-1 with Cove. I think Bray flashed in the pan last night. Unless the only way that they can get a win out of this game or a point is if they work better with Rob, even than they did last night, because Rob Manley is going to score goals for them. But if they can't get the ball to him, and the times that they do get the ball to him, it's in an awful position or boot it over his head that he has to run onto, it's going to be very difficult for him, because I don't see there's enough of players around him to help him out.
One player that might help him with a couple of goals and share the burden, I have to say, had a very good game last night. Curtis Byrne, he had a very good game last night for Bray. He got a goal and he played a big role in the second as well. So he started last season, you remember, really well for Athlone. He got 4 or 5 early on the season. I think he got 6 in the entire season in the end. So it dried up towards the end of the year when Athlone started to struggle. But again, if he got the service, he'd definitely help Rob Manley with the burden of scoring the goals. But I think you're right. I think they'll struggle to create chances against Cove. Cove will be organised, very compact. I don't think there'll be a lot of space for Manley to run into. So what I can see, this is becoming a very direct game. And the one thing that would worry me from a Cove perspective, they've conceded a lot of goals this season. Bray are strong on set pieces. That big target man they have, Huey Douglas, I could see him cause a mayhem in a game like this up in the opposition penalty area. So I think Bray will score, but I'm hoping Cove at home might just have enough. The fact they've got a few goals late, they might have enough quality in the final third to get on the score sheet themselves. So I'm going to call it a 1-1 draw. It's interesting to see how that one plays out. Look, we're going to round it off with our very own Longford Town. Long, long trip coming up to Wexford on Friday, but hopefully it won't be a wasted one like our last trip down the road. How do we see this going?
I really don't know. I genuinely don't know.
Well, isn't the long and short of it this? If Longford play anything like they did for 70 minutes on last night, they'll be beaten.
Oh, 100%. If they have any motions on playing the same way they did last night, they should just forfeit the game. Don't even waste the time travelling down there. I said it, I highlighted it already. I cannot believe 2 games into the season, lads quitting. Lads down in tools. Baffling, absolutely baffling. And, you know, any of the players that listen to this pod, you need to look at yourselves, because I just couldn't believe looking at Atlanta, you know, two games in, playing probably one of the worst teams in the division so far this season. And the tools are put on the floor, lying down.
And for any of the new players, and quite a few of them that do probably listen to the pod, hello, how are you? Anyone that listened to this show last season, Longford Town were bet around the country, up and down the country, week in, week out last season. Me and you very rarely said a bad word about Longford last season. And I seen tweets from supporters saying this last night as well, that they were saying they went to every game when they could, obviously outside restrictions, all the rest. And they never criticised the team once. They got behind them. They went up to Derry. I seen one fan saying, went up to Derry and said, I'm going to make a bit of noise up here and back the lads, even though I know we're going to lose. But the lads are trying their best. They're working their socks off.
Yeah.
That wasn't there last night.
No. It 100% wasn't.
And that's why the reaction, you touched on it earlier, Section O, getting on the back of certain players. You can say maybe they shouldn't do that or whatever. The frustration was there because they were looking at players not making the runs, not being brave in possession. They weren't giving it their all. They were playing within themselves for whatever reason. That can't continue. If they do that on Friday, they'll be beaten, and they'll be beaten off the park by Wexford.
Oh, they will, and they'll deserve every bit of it. Now, I was talking to Fitzy, who was standing in Section O last night, a good friend of the pod. He couldn't even remember what was said to the player or back from the player. But he said it wasn't even that bad. Because he'd remember something, geez, you know, that's a bit much. Do you know what I mean? He said it wasn't bad enough that it was even something that you'd remember 2 minutes later.
Yeah.
But he wasn't even that bothered by the player responding. I was more annoyed about it and I didn't even see it. I couldn't believe that two games into the season you're losing at home to a team that has done absolutely stone nothing so far this season. And you think it's okay to direct your energy to a clam like Fitzy in the stand. That
shouldn't even be entering crazy. Your mind.
Oh, Lord bless us. Like, people may have seen or gathered from listening to me in the pod, I'd be animated enough at a game. And I've never seen a player do that before, except, well, Daniel Lafferty last season. That was hilarious. But I saw a linesman do it last year in one of the games that was without fans. Was
semi-fans, so to say.
Yeah, it was like particularly restricted. I couldn't believe that an official turned around to interact with a fan like that. I was floored.
But anyway, we're getting away from the subject here. Wexford against Longford. Who's going to win?
Hold on one sec. If Longford Town have any motions or makings on doing anything this season, if they do not rectify a number of issues from last night, they'll be wrote off by May. And that's only 6 or 7 weeks away. I'm going to go 1-1, and that's been incredibly kind to Longford
Town. Wow, and it's very rare you wouldn't predict a Town win.
It is very rare, but now
must tell people how bad last night was.
I had to go to a lot of draws for Longford Town last season. Make no mistake, because we were very bad. But unless I hope Gary Cronin and the management staff have went through every single one of those players last night, because very few of them can be remotely satisfied with their performance. What I would do want to highlight, I thought Dean McMenemy on loan from Shamrock Rovers. They have a real gem on their hands if he keeps going the way he's going. He was exceptional. And Luke Dennison, I thought he made some good saves and wasn't helped out by the players in front of him.
No.
Rest of them, boys, pull up your socks and do it quick, because I don't know where we'll go for the rest of the season. 1-1, and that's been kind to the town.
I found that quote in the group chat. That might be the worst football match of all the football matches. And then this morning, followed on from it, I have my reservations about whether that was even a sport. That's how bad it was last night.
Yeah, it was atrocious. An absolute atrocity. Obscenity on the game.
I think that sums it up. You're going 1-1. Look, Gary, how could I predict a Town win after last night? You can say it was a blip. You can say it was whatever. Maybe it will be. Maybe they'll come out and win 5-0 on Friday. And that's fair enough. We'll forget about it. We'll say, geez, remember that night we were absolutely shocking against Bray? But
I won't forget that.
You said it early on in the pod. There was a lot of, we're 2 weeks in or two games in for Longford. There was a lot of warning signs there last night. A lot of very worrying things that occurred on and off the pitch. And there was absolutely no way I can predict. And I hope I'm wrong. Very much hope I'm wrong. People might say we're bashing them, we're slating them, we shouldn't be doing it. Again, I will direct you to any podcast from last season when Longford were getting better around the park. Go and listen. There was never a critical word said because the effort was there.
Yeah.
Last night wasn't good enough, wasn't acceptable on any level. Wexford 2-0 on Friday for me.
Look, I think that's the right way to say it. We're obviously Longford Town fans and we want Longford Town to do well. But I can't believe that Gary Cronin not only has, you know, football matters to deal with, but now he has like mentality matters to deal with, and we're only two games in.
Mm-hmm.
It's baffling. How is this possible? It's extremely frustrating. But look, we'll just have to wait and see what happens on Friday. Unfortunately, we'll make the pilgrimage again. Please God, and we'll see how we get on. But yeah, I wouldn't be going down there with any confidence. Fortunately, the last time we were there, as you may remember, was at the end of 2020 when Longford Town needed to rely on other results to get into the playoffs. Lost at home. I think about Wexford's third win that season.
Yeah.
Or something equally horrific. But yeah, look, I'll be looking forward to going down to Ferry Carrig. Good team, good streaming team down there.
Yep.
John Harper and Ronan McCarthy. So if you can't make your way down to the game, please buy the stream. They do a good production there. As good as Longford Town's, make no mistake. But
if you buy the stream, you'll hear Gary shouting and roaring in the background. But,
absolutely. If you haven't heard me talk enough crap already.
That's where we'll leave it. I realise this may have been a little bit of a heavier Longford Town podcast than it usually is. Anyone that listens to us week in, week out, you know we cover every team in this league, but there was just so many games to get through. Anyone that knows my daily work, it is the busiest part of the year. It's Cheltenham. I'm a sports broadcaster, so I just simply wasn't able to run around and conduct three or four interviews this week like I normally would. And obviously, we would have planned on getting some content down in the Markets Fields on Friday, but that didn't happen. But fair play again to Mike Ahern for coming on and fronting up and answering those questions from myself earlier in the show. And as I said earlier in the show, I think it was important for us as fans to have that discussion, because no supporter in the country should find themselves in the position that Longford Town fans found them in. Found themselves in on Friday. So I think it was really important we asked those questions, and there's probably further questions to ask, particularly in regards to the FAI, I think, as we said earlier. So there are things we might try and chase up over the next few weeks and find out what is the procedure when things like this happen, and is there a plan going forward, because that can't happen again. But look, hopefully you enjoyed the rest of the show. Thanks a million for listening. Hopefully we'll have John back next week. He's away on holidays at the moment, but if not, we'll try and get a special guest host on with us to try and break it up, because I'm sure you're sick of listening to the two of us. But look, that's where we'll leave it. Thanks to Gary for joining myself, Kieran Burke. As ever, if you want to support the podcast, you can leave us a donation on buymeacoffee.com/BTSLOI. You can donate through our website, betweenthestripes.net, where you can also find the podcast, all our latest content. You know the crack by now. We're on socials as well, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Search Between the Stripes, you'll find us there. And of course, do feel free to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcast from, and leave a review as well if you can. That would be greatly appreciated. But for this week, for myself, Kieran Burr, from Gary Riley, thanks a million for listening. And please God, it's not a wasted trip for anyone this Friday night.
Thanks for listening. Check out betweenthestripes.net for all your favourite BTS content in one place. See you all next week.